In 2002, there's a tragic sea canoe accident. 52-year-old man named John Darwin died when he and his sea canoe went missing off the northeast coast of England. Now, the rescuers searched for about 12 hours. They were baffled that he could go missing with calm waters, but all they recovered was his sea canoe. Now, he left behind his wife and two sons. Now, this tragic story is in the news at the moment, though it happened 5 years ago. It's in the news at the moment because on the 1st of December, a couple of weeks ago, John Darwin walked into a London police station and said, "I believe I'm a missing person." The whole story about his tragic death was a lie. His wife had managed to gain about £150,000 of life insurance out of the lie. Now, his wife's now been arrested, but just before she was arrested, she was interviewed by a newspaper, and she regretted the whole incident. She said she'd been living a lie, and this is what she also said. She said, "I hate lying. I'm not a dishonest person." Well, let the facts speak for themselves, but I think she's typical of most of us, that most of us would say that we hate lying. But it just happens that we sometimes have a problem when we don't like the truth, and we have to choose between the truth and the lie. And when it comes to the truth about God, the Bible says not just some of us, but all of us have a problem, and we make the wrong choice. But that is why Jesus was born. So the next in our series of Jesus Came is, as it says at the top of the outline, Jesus came to testify to the truth. And as the first point says, the truth that he came to testify to is this, that he is king over all. John 18, which is the passage that we're looking at tonight, is about the final hours of Jesus' life before he was killed. He'd been arrested hours before this by the Jewish authorities. They had condemned him to death and they had taken him along to the Roman governor. And what we find in the middle of chapter 18 is a private interview as Pilate asks Jesus questions. I'll read a little bit of it. I'll pick it up in verse 33. Pilate went back inside the palace and summoned Jesus and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked. "Or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "It was your people, your chief priests, who handed you over to me. What is it you've done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a Jew then. You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You are right in saying I'm a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." Pilate needs to know, is Jesus a political threat? Is he a revolutionary, a challenge to Rome? Is he a self-proclaimed king? And after a very short interview, he can figure out that he is no political threat. His followers aren't going to fight for him, but he is a king. Now, Jesus doesn't so much say, "Yes, I'm a king," as "I have a kingdom." And the difference is in that word kingdom, it's referring not so much to a block of land, a territory where he is the king. It refers to the rule, the exercise of authority that the king has. And what we see in this little section here and going into chapter 9 is an example of how far that rule extends. Because the rule of this king extends to everyone and everything. There are three examples here. The first one, and I've listed them on the outline, the rule of Jesus extends to all situations. Verse 31 and 32, Pilate said to the Jewish leaders. Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law. But we have no right to execute anyone, the Jews objected. This happened so that the words of Jesus, that the words Jesus had spoken indicating the kind of death he was going to die would be fulfilled. The Jewish authorities are making their plans. They know what they want of Jesus, but he's gone ahead of them. He knows what they're up to. In fact, it's all in his keeping. He even said what would happen way before they knew it was going to happen. He has rule over this situation, as unjust as it is. The second example is that Jesus has rule over all authorities. Now, Pilate continues his questioning into chapter 19. And there he keeps asking Jesus questions, and Jesus is silent before his accuser. And verse 10 and 11. Do you refuse to speak to me? Pilate said. Don't you realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you? Jesus answered, you would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin. Pilate represents Tiberius Caesar, the most powerful human ruler in the earth, in the world. But Jesus represents God, in whose power lies Caesar and Pilate and the Jewish authorities. In fact, all rulers have their power because God gives them power. And whether they are just or unjust is all in God's responsibility. They are accountable to him for their rule. Jesus talks about sin and greater sin. This injustice exercised by the rulers will find its own day of judgment as the king holds all rulers accountable for their rule. And the third example, Jesus has rule over all people. Look back in chapter 18, verse 37. Jesus says, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. The prisoner is offering his captor the opportunity to come and follow him, to submit to his rule. The offer, he says, is for everyone. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me, because I am king over everyone. Why did Labor win the last election? Now, there are many reasons as to why that would be the case, but the bottom line is this: more people thought that they'd do a better job of running the country right now. And since the election, some surveys have shown that consumer sentiment is way up for Labor supporters. Very confident, feeling optimistic about the government. They feel they have a capable leader. Now, that's all really good. That's good for our country that we have good leadership. But I doubt that anyone seriously thinks that our leaders are perfect. We just have to leave them in leadership for long enough and we'll see that they make mistakes. We'll disagree with some of the decisions they make. We'll be disappointed. And sooner or later, confidence will actually go down. And eventually, another government will be voted in. Now, that's just the normal cycle of human leadership. But imagine a leader who made no mistakes, that every decision was a good one, that even the ones that you disagreed with, eventually you thought, no, they got that one right too. There were no hidden agendas, no selfishness. It was all open, honest, perfect use of authority. They even knew you if they bumped into you at the shops. They knew you by name. Now, Jesus is that leader. He is the leader of this world. This world with its democracies, its dictatorships, its strong economies, its bankrupt economies, its justice and injustice. He is the ruler over it all. The injustice of his own trial and execution was in his keeping. When we look at our world and we we worry and we grieve over the injustice in it, the evil that's exercised by those in leadership, let alone everyone else. But there will be a day of justice. All people will be brought to account to this ruler. Now that is the truth that Christmas is about. But if that's the truth, and it is a really good truth that there is such a good king over all, but if that's the truth, why doesn't everyone accept it? So secondly there, why doesn't everyone accept the truth? The answer is this: we are all born with a determination to reject the truth. Now, we'll all reject that truth differently, but there are two main groupings of how we're going to do it. And the first one I've got there on the outline is active rejection. There are some who will actively reject the rule of God over them, much like the Jewish authorities do here in John's Gospel. Look into chapter 19, verse 7. The Jews insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God." The Jewish authorities heard Jesus. They even understood what he was saying. They got it. He claims to be the Son of God. He makes himself equal with God. It's blasphemy. He deserves to die. There is no other explanation as to why they would want him crucified. They understood what Jesus was saying, but they completely and actively reject it. Now, there are some today who are like this, who will hear the claims of Jesus, who will understand the truth about God and completely and actively reject it. They'll actually go on the offensive. You've got the author Richard Dawkins, who writes a book, The God Delusion, saying you've got to be deluded to even think there's a God. And so he's out there trying to convince you to give up that delusion. Or we've got, at a different end of the market, Philip Pullman writing children's books with his stated aim to kill God in the minds of children. He's been quoted as saying, "My books are about killing God." And so he's written books. One of them has just been made into a movie, The Golden Compass. He is on the offensive trying to say there is no God. You're a fool to think there's a God. He completely rejects the truth of God. It's active rejection. Now, I say that there's a few people like that because I think in the world's population that is a great minority of people. The rest express our rejection of God, I think, more passively. A bit like Pilate here in the account in John's Gospel. Pilate questions Jesus. And he knows what's going on. He's heard Jesus. And look at verse 38. "What is truth?" Pilate asked. "With this he went out again to the Jews and said, 'I find no basis for a charge against him.'" He knows that the Jews have him here because they're jealous. That's what it says in Matthew's Gospel. And he repeats it three times. He says it once there in 19 verse 4. "Once more Pilate came out and said to the Jews, 'Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him.'" And then down in verse 6. "But Pilate answered, 'You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him.'" Three times he declares it. Three times means it's a settled matter. Jesus is innocent. The Roman governor knows he's innocent. He even tries to have Jesus released a number of times. But in the end, he hands him over to be crucified. Why? Because Jesus is not a cause that he's going to stick his neck out for. Whatever Jesus claimed, it had nothing to do with him. Jesus said, "Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." Pilate says, "What is truth? Whatever you are not my king." Now, Pilate doesn't go out of his way to reject Jesus, but when it comes to decision time, he sides with those who do. Some of you would remember the late great Australian motor racing car driver Peter Brock, in his really in the heyday of his career, when he had a very lucrative arrangement with Holden Motors, and he had his own name on a series of their cars. He wanted to introduce a little accessory onto all of his cars, and he called it the energy polarizer. It was a little black box, and inside it had some magnets and a piece of crystal. And he said, this energy polarizer will make any car run better, even a horrible car, let alone my Holden dealer team cars. And he put his reputation on the line, because basically to have him involved with Holden, their cars had to have this little thing on it. And he made Holden choose. And Holden rejected his claim. And so a long-standing relationship with the motor company ended. Now, I wonder if he'd had just said, well, it's an we'll make it an optional extra, or if he just sold it privately with his name on it, that the relationship might have continued. But he didn't. He said, no, this is the truth about this box. And so Holden had to reject that truth because they didn't believe it, and they had to go on in production with this car. So they had to be active in their rejection. Now, there were a lot of other people, basically anyone else who heard the story, like myself, that might have been interested, thought, oh, I wonder if that works, I wonder if that'll work on my car, but at the end of the day did nothing about it. I didn't do anything about it because I thought, well, my car runs okay, and I'm pretty sure that thing wouldn't make any difference, but I'm not going to fork out the money to find out. And so whether it was right or wrong, I don't know if the thing was true or not, but I didn't really care. And when it came down to it, I didn't do anything. And so the effect of my action was just the same as the active rejection of Holden's. A passive rejection is effective as an active rejection. And that's what we're like with God. It's, well, God, could be this, what Jesus is saying could be true, I'm not sure, but I'm not going to put my life on the line for it. So in the end, it's not really connected to me. It's irrelevant to me. It's unimportant to me. And so I reject it passively. It's just a polite way of doing it, but it's in the end the same thing. And the scary thing is that we do it as Christians, even after we've been converted. We know the truth. We know that Jesus is our King, and we know that he has rule over our lives, and we give him the rule over our lives, or at least we give him most of it. There are some areas of our lives that we don't. Some areas that we like to keep under self-rule. It might be the area of our speech, the things that we say, or how we say things, how we talk about other people. It might be over our use of our money. It might be over our ambitions. It might be over what I do on the computer late at night when everyone else is in bed. We try to job share rule over our lives. Yes, Jesus is the ruler, but I'm also a good co-ruler. But in the end, what we're doing is rejecting the rule of God. And it's no better than the active rejection of those who completely say there is no God and it's a waste of time. It's just that we're trying to be polite about it. Now that brings us to why Jesus said he was born and why he was born to testify to the truth. So thirdly, I came to testify to the truth. When Jesus speaks, When he gives this testimony, our rejection, whether it's active or passive, our rejection has the opportunity to change. Verse 37 again. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. Now, literally, what he says there is, everyone on the side of truth hears my voice. And that phrase, hears my voice, has an echo about it. If you're familiar with John's Gospel, come back to chapter 10 and hear what Jesus says about his voice and about hearing his voice. He speaks of himself as the shepherd, And in chapter 10, verse 3, he says, "The watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out." Or in verse 16, "I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them out also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd." And then down to verse 27. "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. There is one shepherd, and when he speaks, his sheep, whoever they are and wherever they are, recognize the voice and they respond. They respond to the truth that he reveals." And in verse 32, in chapter 8, verse 32, he says, "You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." Sin enslaves us. But when Jesus speaks, as we hear that voice, his sheep are set free. The truth is revealed. Now, Pilate, this Roman governor, was a slave. The voice of Jesus offered him freedom, and he chose to reject it. But not all reject it. This testimony of Jesus was written down, and in chapter 20, John tells us why he wrote his gospel. He says in verse 30-31, "These are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name." The voice of Jesus, the testimony of Jesus is recorded for us, and as we encounter it in the written word, in the scriptures, we can respond. And we are proof that the sheep do hear the shepherd's voice, as are countless who have gone before us and around the world now have responded to that voice. And even now in those scary times that I mentioned when we tried a job share, the voice of Jesus exposes it. And we'd all know times when we have been harbouring sin in our life, and it's the voice of Jesus. It's encountering him in the scriptures, and we realise, what a fool. And we repent. And we change. We submit to his rule as we should. And we're set free. That tragic sea canoe accident, John Darwin, 2002, it was all a lie. And when John Darwin, alive and well, walked into a police station, he was a living testimony to the truth that the story was a lie. There is a God. He rules the world and everyone in it. And Jesus' birth, his coming into the world, is testimony to that truth. He is the King. And to hear his voice is to hear that truth and to be called to follow him. There is no Christian who can remain faithful to Jesus without constantly hearing that voice. And of course, the voice is, as I've mentioned, recorded in the scriptures for us. And as we hear that voice, he calls us to repent of sin that's still in our life. He reveals the truth about this fallen world, and we are not deceived by it. And he reminds us and renews our hope in the freedom and the life that we have in him. And then for those who aren't yet Christian, they need to hear his voice too. I can't change someone's mind. You can't change someone's mind so that they'll follow Jesus. But what changes minds and hearts is the voice of the shepherd. And so what we need, what they need, is the opportunity to hear it. And that's what we need to keep praying for our friends, that they have opportunities to hear what Jesus said, to hear what the scriptures are saying, and to respond to it. As Brad encouraged us last week, give our friends a Bible and say, let's read this bit together. Let's read a bit of the gospel. Let's read right through a gospel together. And just give them the opportunity to hear the voice and respond to it. Invite them along to church. Invite our friends to hear the services, the sermons, the Bible passages at Christmas. Let them hear the voice of the shepherd Give them a book that faithfully takes them into the scriptures, into who Jesus is and what he said in the Bible. And then ask them later on, well, what did you think of it? Let's talk about that. The sheep know the shepherd's voice. He calls them and they'll follow. And so one day, by God's mercy, our friends will accept the truth too. Jesus said, I am a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. Let me pray to him now.